Series for Office 365. My name is Jeremy Chapman. So over the past year, we focused on how to take advantage of Office 365. If you look back at season one, I covered all of the topics around client deployment with my co-host Yoni Kirsch in terms of how to provision and manage Office 365 Pro Plus. In season two, we expanded, went beyond the client and across the stack, looking at IT and user needs. So what we want to do on this show is really step back and explore what the shift to the cloud means for IT pros. And to do that, I'm joined by Mr. Curtis Sawin.
Hello.
Thanks for being here. And he's worked with a lot of the IT pros doing early adoption of Office 365 and Office 365 Pro Plus.
Right. And we often see sometimes a mindset that when people see a shift, they think, I'm going to shift to the cloud, they get nervous that they're going to shift themselves out of a job or that they're going to have less control. And the good news is, that's totally not the case.
So over the next 15 minutes or so, we're going to discuss all of that, what that means in terms of your roles as IT pros and what that means to move to Office 365 as a cloud service. But before we get started, as is tradition, let's have a look at today's trivia question.
True or false? You can establish a remote connection via PowerShell for administering your users and data within Office 365.
Stay tuned for the answer at the end of the show. You know, Curtis, one conversation I had recently with a friend of mine, longtime friend, is basically when I move to the cloud, he's an Exchange admin, Is it going to jeopardize my job? Is it going to be something in terms of changing the way that I work? And these kind of alarmist opinions happen all the time, and really change is inevitable, right?
Yeah, and we do. We hear that all the time, and you're right. And I guess the challenge is that, you know, IT's not going away. If your job is just to keep the lights on, well, then maybe, because really, your end users and the business is really only going to notice when you do a bad job. But we all know that's not what IT pros do.
Right. They don't do that. They don't just keep the lights on. You and
right.
I, we've come from an IT background. And really, if you think about it, change has happened really since we were working. I don't want to go too far back, because you could go all the way back to client and terminal days and all those things. But if you think about it from an IT, there's kind of two different vectors I want to talk about, both from the IT side as well as from the user side. There are two different things that, you know, in terms of the change, you know, aspects. First off, when we look at IT infrastructure.
Right. So back, if you're an infrastructure person, back in the, you know, early 2000s, 10 years ago, you're
right.
Spending a lot of time wiring services and putting them all together.
Right. So you might have been building out a bunch of infrastructure. I was a big fan of Windows Server System Reference Architecture. I even started out at Microsoft building all that stuff. And you had, you know, you're putting these pieces together. That slowly became more and more modeled. So then you saw this rise of virtualization and automation. So we saw a huge rise with both vert and automation. And that really, a lot of people would have said, well, geez, now that we've risen into this virtualization automation kind of mindset, does that mean that the guy who's building out those servers and taking that maybe optical or file media and building those servers out, does he go away?
Exactly. I mean, you would think with automation, you're making so many things much more efficient and faster and cheaper, you'd think jobs would go away there. But it hasn't.
It didn't really go away
either.
Exactly.
When I learned VBScript, there were so many doors that opened for me, not that ended up shutting for everyone else.
You're right. In automation, really, the more that you mastered that, the more opportunities you had. And at the same time, on a user level, there was a time back when you used to have the computer that was kind of allocated to you. If you were lucky, maybe your employer gave you a phone. And, you know, you'd only use those couple of devices. But really, that started to change as well, right?
Right. And then goes mobility. And then there's the internet. And then multiple devices, device proliferation.
Right.
And these devices are always connected to the internet, but sometimes not through the corporate firewall.
Right. And if you think about the way the consumer trends start to shape up, they might have gone from, you know, BlackBerries, or they started using things like iPhones and iPads. And sometimes there wasn't always going to be a connectivity between what you offered inside your domain and that device. But the users ended up finding a way.
Yep.
And really,
always find a way.
And it added a bit more pain from an IT perspective, because then they had to figure out, okay, user really wants to be productive on this device. How do I make that work? I'm going to have some trade-offs, whatever. But all of that makes it really difficult in terms of managing that from an IT perspective. At the same time, from a virtualization perspective, we're thinking about, okay, well, now that we're automating everything, we've modeled out how we build out services and all of that stuff, why do I need to actually manage the physical sites for my data centers? Why do I need to buy server racks and go through all the procurement process to get hardware and metal and depreciate all of those things?
Exactly.
It becomes harder and harder to even build up stuff because I've got all of these things I'm sitting on. Wouldn't it just be nice if I could start offloading all of that into a service where I can basically turn it on and start remoting into somebody else's data center and have the services that I need there? So we saw from an IT perspective this kind of rise of cloud computing. You see it from infrastructure as a service, many IaaS providers doing that type of work, where basically we can move some of our on-prem investment into the cloud to really give us instantaneous scale. I might have seasonality if I'm a retailer, say in Christmas or holiday season, that this will give me instant scale up.
Yeah, it's great.
At the same time, though, the nice thing was from a user perspective, they wanted to be able to get these devices to connect to services as well, and they kind of sought the same solution going to the cloud. Let's say I wanted to send a 100-megabyte file.
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of customers or a lot of end users would just find a way if their IT didn't have any mechanism to share that amongst their team. So they'd find some consumer way of doing it that might not be as secure and might not be as manageable.
Right. So then basically instead of not just bring your own device, which is kind of the late 2000s that we saw, they start to bring their own services. So file sharing, collaboration, maybe real-time co-authoring, those types of things, maybe enterprise social. People are going outside of what you're providing maybe in your domain side and finding those options in the cloud. And then basically that means that IT is left trying to manage what that means from a security
right.
perspective, a content perspective. So wouldn't it be better if I could control the data, protect my business, and really enable all of these services that users are begging for and do all of that, you know, with the control of IT? And that's really what Office 365 gives you. So you have kind of this convergence, and this is where the convergent needs meet, is when I can take both of those cloud infrastructures together, I can then break down that barrier between the user and the IT side, and I can manage all of the traffic. So anything that I want to do from my own data sources back to the user, or anything I want to host up here, I'm controlling who has access, I'm controlling the services as they're rolling out, I'm doing change management with my users, and really IT is getting a bunch of the value and the credit, and users are seeing IT as heroes in terms of giving them more functionality.
Right, and then it becomes less about managing the actual devices and more about managing the data in a secure and compliant way.
Right, and all of this is extremely important, but there are still some tools and some processes in terms of what we would recommend IT pros to start using to really hone in their skills in terms of managing remote services. And a lot of that comes from the on-premises world in terms of managing Exchange, what you would do, what you'd manage with SharePoint. Those are a lot of the same tool sets. A lot of it's the same. A lot of it's different, and a lot of it gets better also as you move into the new model.
So that's a great point. So let's take a look about, well, what is the same, what's different, and what's changed.
So we moved to Office 365 and cloud services. A lot of things stay the same. Some things are different, and some things get better, right?
Certainly. So let's take a look at some of the stuff that stays the same.
Right, and we both come from a client deployment and kind of an infrastructure and management world. Client deployment definitely stays the same because we do have system requirements we need to meet on the Windows side or the browser side that we need to make sure those devices keep. If it goes outside of the Windows platform, there's a few things that users administer as well.
Right, and administration stays the same. So how about we take a look at the admin portal?
Right, and this is really important because the administration of the service is really, and we've tried to align it as much as we can to the on-premises experience if you're using Exchange Server 2013 or SharePoint 2013. So here I'm in the Office 365 portal. I can see my service settings, and the nice thing is because we're in a browser and we've got all these different workloads running, we can get to really everything. We like to say single pane of glass a lot at Microsoft, but we can get to really everything in one place and get to all those different controls. I can also see all of the health of my services across everything that I have here, which is Exchange, SharePoint, Link, all the things that I would do as an IT pro to check to make sure it's all working, rights management services, Azure Active Directory, all of that is very important. Moving on to the Exchange Admin Center, if I look at that, I can see that I'm doing the same mailbox management. I can go to compliance management tab and look at things like in-place holds, data loss prevention, and in protection, all the same filters, rules, spam rules, device quarantining, all of that stuff I would be managing from an on-prem standpoint. Literally, it's the same UI and the same paradigm in terms of managing Exchange. And I go into SharePoint, it's the same kind of story. We've got the exact same controls if I'm managing SharePoint online or using the same admin console construct from an Exchange on-premises implementation. So all of this stuff, I mean, it's obviously I'm managing things like SkyDrive Pro here.
I like that, changing the storage on SkyDrive or OneDrive Pro, OneDrive for business.
Just imagine that on premises, changing storage, you'd have to go out and make a requisition order for all the storage for maybe in a SAN, be able to extend that out to manage all that across all of your users. Here I can just hit a drop down and give everybody 50 gigs of storage. Plus I can do things like administering Yammer support, external file sharing, or requiring information rights management right here in one place.
That's great. That's great.
So beyond even all the stuff that's the same, a few things get to be a bit different, right?
Yeah, let's talk about the stuff that goes away.
Right.
First of all, hardware configuration, server software installation, right? And that's gone. One of the great things is also we can change windows to apply service packs or install software or software updates. Gone.
Right. All those weekends that I know I've spent in terms of getting things deployed from a desktop provisioning standpoint, that can go away as well on the server end and make sure that we can basically stay up to date.
That's huge.
And we even changed the application model so as we're updating the underlying components, even those dependencies that you might have had in the older days of customizing on-prem SharePoint or on-prem services with managed code, that even starts to go away and you can be taking those updated services through service pack type releases, bigger milestones, or even upgraded versions. Because those major version upgrades go away.
Right. Managing the dependencies between different infrastructure components, that was always a major headache for IT pros.
Right. And just the infrastructure itself, the hardware, keeping data centers running, keeping all that stuff, and acquiring new hardware and cooling it with air conditioning, all of those things, up systems, all the stuff I used to manage when I was doing data center work. All of that stuff's very easy in terms of just being able to remote into somebody else hosting that service for me.
Okay.
But beyond all of that, there is some stuff even that we can do in terms of administering the service that lets us scale a bit more. Because this UI, it's great, but I probably want some more power. If I'm a real IT pro and I'm not afraid of the command line or I'm not afraid of PowerShell, I'm going to want to do things that will let me do batch processes and let me configure maybe 10,000 mailboxes or 10,000 sites at once. I can do some of that work too, right?
Certainly. So why don't we take a look at some simple PowerShell demos so we can see the power that we can have automation with our Office 365 service.
All right, and you're ready to show us that, right?
You betcha. So one of the typical things that IT pros do is manage users and manage user objects. Mm-hmm. So here I am in the portal. I'm just going to go over to users and groups, and you'll see I'm the only one here. Standard administrative task, I'm going to create a new user. I'm going to create my old girlfriend, Susie, fake name.
Yes.
She's very nice.
Right.
And we're just going to create a user ID for her. She's not administrator, but she is in the United States. I'm not ready to give her any licenses yet, so create the user. Optionally, send an email with the password, and that's it, right? Typical administrative task.
But that's very manual. We can make this done and do this all with automation, right?
Exactly. So what I've got is a very simple PowerShell script that takes a look at a text file and in bulk creates about 7 or 8 different user IDs. Now, 7 or 8's not much, but think 700, 7,000, 70,000. That's huge.
And there are tools that we can do to even automate that and really mirror your user objects right from your AD using directory synchronization.
Exactly, right.
And we can even support different directory types now to where even if you have LDAP or other directory services in place, it's possible to synchronize those directory objects.
Certainly. So here's an example. I'm just going to run this simple PowerShell script and put in my credentials. And then it's going to pretty quickly create my, I think it's about 6 or 7 different user objects for me. So I'll go back in the portal and take a look at the results. Let me just refresh this view.
Okay.
And
there
boom,
they are.
There's my new people.
Right. So now you've got people in the pool, but you actually have to provision them some services, right?
Right. So let's say I want to start in my Office 365 journey slowly. I want to give them Office 365 Pro Plus.
Okay.
So I could go into each user object and assign them the Office Professional Plus license here.
Which might work with 7 users.
Exactly. But what if I want to do 700, 7,000, that's going to be a little bit of a headache.
Right.
So I've got another PowerShell script where I'm just going to add different license assignments. In this case, I'm going to add the Office 365 Pro Plus, which is called Office Subscription.
Right.
So again, run the PowerShell script.
And it's logging in, it's authenticating you to be able to run these batch processes using the same Azure Active Directory service.
Exactly.
As an admin to authenticate in.
So now what I've done is I've created user objects and now I've assigned them all the Office 365 Pro Plus license assignment. So now they're all licensed for Pro Plus.
Right, now they can actually use it.
Exactly. So now I can introduce Office Pro Plus as my first journey for Office 365. Let's say I want to extend that. Now I'm ready to provision them OneDrive Pro for business. Well, I'm going to run this same script again, and OneDrive Pro is part of SharePoint Online. So I'm just going to add the SharePoint Enterprise license assignment and put in my credentials. And again, very quickly to update these six different objects. I'll go back to the portal. And now I'll just check the user objects, and we'll hopefully see that I've added the SharePoint Online license assignment. So this is a great way for me to introduce change at the pace that I'm comfortable with. And now I will get credit for introducing OneDrive Pro for Business to my users.
And all of these things that we see here in the UI, of course, we've got PowerShell scripts to enable all of this stuff in the back end with automation. So even some of the higher end things, if I want to do if I wanted to use it to generate rules or to do things like turn on Office 365 message encryption or any of those higher order, say, exchange management aspects, I can do that with PowerShell as
Certainly.
Well.
Certainly. Creating user objects and manipulating licenses is just the tip of the iceberg.
So all of that is really a change that lets you provide innovation very quickly to your users. It's something that really gives you, again, as the IT pro, credit for keeping all of that stuff up to date. And really, instead of the users going out and finding and cherry picking maybe the bring your own services, the file sharing or the social networks, those types of things, you can give that to them very quickly, very easily, and you can automate all of that using PowerShell.
Exactly, exactly. It's very powerful.
So it lets you keep up with user demands, it lets you enable all the new scenarios, and it's not just about end user features, but also security and management features, encryption, however I want to set up, if I want to use things like SMIME, all those types of controls, I can do all of that right from the portal. And you can imagine just even looking at the portal, it's something that an IT pro has to administer, all of this stuff. It's not something that an end user is going to log into, or even
exactly
the guy buying the software. You're going to have that kind of knowledge as an IT pro and as somebody who's familiar with Exchange and these workloads to understand how all of that works and what it means to turn something off or turn something on and really know what that means from an end user standpoint.
Exactly. You'll need to be up to date with the new changes, and so you can validate them and make sure that you can introduce them into your environment.
And one of my favorite examples that I always like to talk about is how I can turn on things like rights management services. So I was actually at Microsoft when we were writing things like Windows Server System Reference Architecture for enabling the early days of rights management services. And at MSIT, or Microsoft IT, we basically put in 13 new servers, 3 SQL servers, a cluster, all of this stuff in order to get everything running from a rights management service perspective. And in about 5 clicks, I was able to get that running using Azure AD and Azure AD RMS in the cloud. And it's all part of just the normal Enterprise E3 suite of Office 365.
And you know, that's a great example of how the IT pro's job just evolved, just adapted, right? You spent a lot of time architecting. Well, here's the reference architecture. And now it's what, 5 clicks?
Right.
But you still have a job.
Right.
It's just
30 seconds. And some of those things, like in the past, maybe you wanted to spend more time, you know, building up more complex transport rules. You wanted to do things like data loss prevention, but just didn't have the time. You were spending weekends keeping everything on, you know, doing break fix scenarios in case you needed to troubleshoot various aspects of the environment, apply patches, service packs, all of that stuff can go away.
Exactly.
And again, all of these changes are being viewed as net positive changes that you're giving not only to users, but also to your IT department, to the security teams that are in place, because you can enable this stuff extremely quickly. It means you can bring positive and good change into the environment and not really be seen as a blocker to things, right?
And from IT can no longer be considered a blocker of stuff, but more like an enabler of stuff, where you're providing the value because the change we're providing is incremental and a lot more at a rapid pace, so it's a lot easier to manage that change.
Right, and ultimately it's about getting credit for all of this change. And the nice thing also with Office 365 is you can brand it all as your own, whether even we're talking about things like the new encryption tools where I can put my own banners in there, I can use my own domains, and when I log in, I don't see necessarily even any Office 365 verbiage on the screen from an end user standpoint, because they don't really care about that. They just know that IT has given them a new service, whether it's something like Yammer or whether it's something like real-time co-authoring in the web apps. These are things that you can control and turn on very quickly, and even do that in a way that's branded if you're Contoso, which we like to use a lot, or Microsoft, or whatever your customer name or your username or your tenant name is. You can apply that right to the service, and it looks like something that you've provisioned. So it's very cool in that you can provide that quickly and get the credit for that. But you know, all of this really accrues to IT staying in control in a lot of ways, getting more control, because you can stay ahead of change and stay up to date with the user demands to where they're not going out and finding stuff that they want on their own, and then you have to kind of wrestle that and bring it back into your own control set.
Yeah, and managing that big change gap becomes really difficult.
Right. So all of this is you know, extremely pertinent to somebody who's thinking about moving to the cloud. That's about all the time we have for today in this show. But before we conclude, let's have a look at the trivia question.
True or false? You can establish a remote connection via PowerShell for administering your users and data within Office 365.
So the answer to the question is true. You can use PowerShell to remotely administrate quite a bit of stuff with Office 365.
Yeah, there's a ton of stuff you can do with PowerShell, a lot more than what we talked about today.
And probably a lot more than some of you think in terms of all the things that you can do. And it expands also the commandlets and things that you can do every single day. So we've covered a lot of ground today, and it's really about changing the way we think about administering the service and not doing all of those things on-prem in the way that you're doing them maybe in the past, but enabling your users with new technology before they go out and try to find these things themselves. It really is about, in some ways, getting more control for IT in terms of assisting with change management and taking more credit for changes as they're implemented in the organization.
Right. Change management becomes a lot more exciting when you're delivering value.
Right, and your customers, your end users, are also a lot happier when you're giving them new features and new things that they want to be able to use. So all this content and more can be found at Microsoft.com/garage. Thanks for watching, and goodbye for now.